This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Robert, I want to ask you this question, if you don't mind.
Of course not.
What happened is Fiona Patton had the name of the sex party, got in, then became, here's the problem, then became a politician. Why is it once people become a politician, they fall into the middle ground, they worry about every single solitary vote, they lose all, I won't say this about Fiona quite yet, but they lose all sense of ideology and they just jump for the middle ground. Why is that?
I think part of the reason, and it's so cynical for such a young man, but anyway, I think one of the reasons is the mantra for any politician is win the next election.
And get a pension.
Can't do that anymore, but I think that kind of makes them a little fearful.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the great liberating things about being Lord Mayor is that, you know, I'm kind of freed from that, and that's why I'm enjoying it so much more. Well, it's a benevolent dictatorship, of course, but...
but you still need to win the next election.
The reign of terror continues at town hall. Yeah, that's exactly right. But I think that is it. And I think the other thing is that sometimes you worry about offending people. Not on this program, I've noticed.
Just gonna say.
But politicians do. And it's true, isn't it? I mean, these days...
They go into this safe, boring, tedious...
Yeah. Because you get about 10 years. Because after about 10 years, I reckon you've probably insulted or annoyed 51% of the people.
How long are you a member?
How long was I a member
in
of Parliament?
Yeah.
I was there 14 years.
Oh, okay. So for 4 years, you'd run out of people to insult.
No. I had 7 years in government and 7 years in opposition.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. You were in government, weren't you?
Yeah, enlightened times, Macca.
I want to tell you a very, very quick story about Robert Doyle. We had a lunch. It was a nice lunch. And then we were at the bar having a final drink after lunch.
Yes.
And Robert was there. We were all just chatting. It was lovely. And a woman came up and she said, you know, I've been living interstate for the last few years. Are you the Premier? Robert turns around, doesn't skip a beat, turned around and said, no, but I bloody well should have been. And can I just back that statement up? I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a great line.
You very rarely get a chance, so why pass it up? You
know? Yeah, exactly.
I remember that, by the way.
Now, Your Eminence.
Yes.
Sorry, His Eminence, Lord Bollard Dolly Doyle.
Yes.
You're, I believe, the national patron.
I'm one.
I know you can be a big patron.
Yes.
Of a new group of Libs and Nationals for the Yes campaign.
Yes, I am.
That's, I'm very pleased to see, you know, I fully expected the ratbaggery from the no case, but I'm so pleased to see these members standing up for equal rights, standing up for common sense.
Well, you've got to, don't you? I mean, I'm very pleased, by the way, to join Nick Greiner. Nick was one of my political models. He's what we would call warm and dry in the Liberal Party, meaning that he's socially progressive, but he's economically quite conservative. And I hope that's sort of where I am. As you know, we...
Sounds like the sex party. Sorry.
Don't go there. Sorry, the Reason Party.
We passed
this is going to be a running joke throughout this whole hour, isn't it? You know, maybe even longer.
Like the sex party too.
I was I was quite pleased just before I went away on a short break that we passed a motion at the City of Melbourne saying that the council supports marriage equality. We support the Yes campaign. We happen to have, free of charge, so it wasn't taxpayers' money, use of the major billboard in the city, which is the one on the corner of Flinders and Swanson above
Young and Jackson's.
And we took that saying that Melbourne is a city, and we chose the idea of well-being. Melbourne is a city of well-being. well-being, and the City of Melbourne supports the Yes campaign. And when I was asked about it, and I have been a few times, I said, well, when you think about it, we're so proud of being diverse and tolerant and multicultural. We're very proud of the fact that although we come from all these different countries, we're one Melbourne. And then when you think about it, there is a group in our community that does not have the same set of rights that we have. And someone who made a very powerful impression on me through a personal story, and you've had young Angie Green on this program, she tells the story very simple. She says there are three, she has two brothers and herself, so there are three siblings, and she says two of us can get married and one can't.
Yeah,
And it's not a bad
short... Than that, does it?
It's just straight to the point. And so when I was asked if I would be a national patron, I said, of course I would be. I said, of course I will campaign, you know, very hard. That may upset some people. The one thing I asked for when I moved that motion in council, it was passed unanimously, and I'm very proud of that, because remember, we have Liberals, we have Labor Party members, we have Greens, and we have Independents, and it was unanimous. But one thing I said was, I hope at the City of Melbourne, and remember, at the City of Melbourne, we've got 1,600 employees, and there'll be people who vote yes, and there'll be people who vote no, and there'll be people who abstain. But I hope that we can be a workplace, for instance, that's an exemplar of respectful debate.
Robert, the no vote obviously needs respect. You know, if we bring people into this, kicking and screaming, I mean, it's obviously just not going to work for any of us. But there is the concern that the no vote's going to get a little silly, that it's going to get aggressive. We've already seen parts of that.
Look at their first advertisements.
Yeah.
But you call that out, you know, and in fact, I think that's one of the things that may well be a turning point for people. I was on the great radio 3AW with one of your morning announcers, and we had a caller who said, because the City Council and Robert Doyle has poked their nose into this, I'm now going to vote no. And I said, really? You know, you're not going to make up your own mind on this. You're going to vote that way because I've decided to vote yes and have made that public. And I couldn't quite understand that. Now, that was at the trivial end. If things become nasty, or if they become in any way hurtful, I think we should call that out on both sides.
Yeah,
of course.
His Eminence, Lord Bollard, Robert Dolly Doyle.
Do you have to read that out all the time?
It's just, forget it. Actually, Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
Your boss.
There's a particular way only she can address you, isn't there?
That is quite right.
Other than the way we address you.
She certainly doesn't address me the way
that
she
calls you.
This sounds ridiculous, but it's one of those traditional things about being Lord Mayor.
Yeah.
If the Queen addresses you, and by the way, if she does, I have to be wearing my bicorn hat because I have one of those as well, and no, I will not bring it into the studio. Yeah. She addresses me as well-beloved and right trusty.
Right trusty?
What?
Right. How about that?
Wow.
Well-beloved and right trusty. But only the Queen can call me that.
Oh. Well, no one else would.
No. So I figure I'm safe on this station.
Sounds like a particularly bad advertising slogan for a dog biscuit.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That was actually pretty funny, Justin.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it. One tries, and then one tries again. I have a question for you without noting. Can you, as the Lord Mayor, right trustee, are you able to preside over a wedding ceremony in your role?
No, because I'm not a celebrant.
Oh, okay. Because that would be nice, wouldn't it? If you were to conduct the Lord Mayor... the right trusty Lord Mayor were to preside over the first same-sex coupling,
now,
it would be wonderful.
Here's something funny I said to Emma the other day. I said, because in this country you have to go through a course and you are then licensed as a married celebrant. If the yes vote gets up, I would consider doing that course for exactly that purpose.
There's a good story for you, Joy FM. Yeah, that'll go around the country. Lord Mayor's going to do the first one.
I reckon, you know, with that hat on, we put you on a barge.
It's a bicorn.
A barge?
The bicorn hat.
Yes.
Yeah. He's using it to prop up one corner of his washing machine at the moment. So.
As captain of a ship.
Yes.
You know, you could...
are you going with this?
You could do that.
You don't know, do you?
No.
You're lost in your own story, really.
You could do marriages on the Yarra.
Love cruise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love cruise. It's the love boat with His Eminence.
Yeah, that's right.
I was actually making an incredibly serious point. I'm not actually joking about it. I'm not trying to put you on
the
spot.
Neither am I.
I think that would be a beautiful gesture of your many beautiful gestures that you have let out. It's your YouTube thing going off there, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. your thing. Just click the wrong button.
Yeah. Look, I actually talked to Emma about that the other day. I'm actually quite proud also that since 2007 we've had a relationship register, and so people can come to the city. They go through an induction. It is a formal document that we sign. The state has one as well, but you have to be a citizen, whereas you don't with our relationship register. And I sign those personally, and quite a lot of them, by the way.
I was going to ask you, would people do that?
I think
isn't it like registering a dog or a cat or something?
No, it's actually not like that, Taz. Come on. No, it's people have all sorts of different reasons for doing it. They might not want to go through, you know, a religious ceremony, and that's fair enough. They might not want to go through the marriage registry, and that's fair enough.
They may not have a dog and cat. And that's fair enough.
And originally, of course, it was there for same-sex couples.
Yes.
Now, as it happens, there are people who are not same-sex couples who use it as well. But it is a formal recognition. We have an officer who takes people through that induction. There is a specific form, and it actually gives me great pride to do it. And
I actually can't see the point. I mean, to me, it's
miserable old prick.
Well, I mean, it's another option, but really, it's not. It's not marriage.
No, but it's not. But in the absence of it, it is a statement of commitment between two people. That's not just between them. It actually is
been witnessed by the Lord Mayor
through town hall and the Lord Mayor, and I think that's a good thing to do. I'll bring one in and show you next time I come in.
Great.
Because I've had a number of people, tweet me or who've written to me to show me a photo of themselves, including someone whose name I will not mention, but I was very proud to sign his partner, and they were delighted because for them it was a way in the absence of marriage equality to make an objective declaration. And I think that's the difference, Taz. You can do it subjectively to each other. Yeah. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
But this is an objective declaration, and it's quite a formal document.
Now, you told us about the billboard over Young and Jackson's.
Yep.
What about these stickers I've seen around seen around the city?
We were asked to do this by a number of businesses. You'll see some of those, you know, those silver bullets that you see around the city that are like advertising bollards.
Yes. I hate to use the word,
thank you. You'll see it on that. But if any business wants to put, it's a very small, it just says Melbourne City of Wellbeing, yes to marriage equality, and it's a little rainbow decal that you can put in the window of your shop. And we were asked for those by a number of businesses, so we've produced them.
Great.
And if people want to come and collect them from Town Hall, they can, and put it in their business, and it's a way of businesses around the city showing that they support marriage equality. I'd encourage people to do it.
Well, Macca, I think we should get one for our front door.
We should. Now, we've got a message from a listener here, Robert. He says, now, we know the huge number of enrolments that happened, and you know, the overwhelming majority of those were young people, new enrolments, as well as people updating their information for the postal survey. The listener says the Liberal Party is going to lose a lot of younger voters next election because of the marriage equality issue. How on earth is that a smart strategy? There's some assumptions there.
Yeah. What do you mean, how on earth is that a smart strategy?
Well, that having this plebiscite...
Yeah.
Sorry, this postal survey, and then encouraging young people or people that weren't registered to register. One of your colleagues, Christopher Pine, when asked about this, said that the overwhelming majority of young people, according to surveys, vote Labor and for the Greens. And he acknowledged that and said, yes, but later in life they go to the Conservatives.
Yeah, that's it.
All these new voters, quite apart from the survey, could cause the government some grief.
I've heard that theory.
At the next election?
It's possible. But on the other hand, it's probably going to be a coalition government that delivers marriage equality, isn't it? You know, and that's... There are some things, and I don't mean...
Yes,
I don't
in a very barbed fashion, though. It was pretty... Yeah.
I'm with you all the way. Remember what we were talking about before about respect for the other side of the argument?
Mm.
You know, I'm not going to bag the no side. You know, I don't think that's the way that you win
no,
it.
No.
And by the way, that statement from the listener may well be true. I think it is fascinating that it's something like now, I think it's 1 million people who've registered, and at a normal federal election, and we had one only, 14, 15 months ago, it's a couple of 100,000 who register.
Yeah.
So these are people who have been disaffected and untouched by the political process who now say, hey, hang on, this is something where I want to have a say. And I would argue overwhelmingly they will be people who will vote yes. And therefore, yes, it is.
Conversely, though, I've also heard that a number of the well-organised, more conservative church organisations have been rallying young people and getting them to register to vote no.
And that's possible, Tass, except my view would be that if you belong to those sort of orthodox organisations, you tend to have been
Liberal
enrolled...
Party.
Oh, yes, we're an orthodox... We're an orthodox organisation, yes. But you tend to have enrolled to vote anyway. You know, so there are some groups that don't, of course.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
There are some religious groups that refuse to vote and have exemptions. But if you are that sort of conservative, then my view would be you're probably already enrolled to vote because that's what you want to do. No, my view is that the vast majority of these people, for them, the major political parties are a turn-off. They haven't been interested in the political process.
No.
But now along comes an issue where they say, hey, hang on, this is where I want to have a say. And I partly agree with your caller. I hope that is not the case. But, you know, look, for the moment, my energies are put into the yes campaign as hard as I can go.
Wouldn't it be good to see people believe a little more in political parties? Or political parties do something that make people believe in them a little more? And I'm not talking about the Liberal Party here. As you know, I have no alliance to any political party and never will. But wouldn't it be great if people started believing in them a little bit more again?
Well, except that I think we're in an age now where respect for institutions is breaking down all over the place. I mean, if you think of the institutions of the 60s and 70s where people had respect, the church, you know, do you think people maintain?
No.
But
that doesn't go that way. It doesn't go from the way that people stop respecting the institution. The institution trashed on the people. And the people revolted against them.
And politics, I think, you know, people feel let down. You know, look, I think one of the great problems, I know this is a sort of a sidestep, I'm getting wound up here, it doesn't happen to me. I reckon
I'm not trying to wind you up.
No, I know that. Those young people, I reckon we're kind of breaking a social contract with them. We sort of say to young people, okay, you work hard, go to uni or get a trade, don't take drugs, and what
get
will happen
is... Get lots of debt.
But we say to them, what you'll be able to do then is you'll get a job, you know, in an area that you'll enjoy, that you want to work in, and you'll be able to afford a house like your parents did and raise a family. And that's a social contract that I think we have broken, because I don't think that's true anymore.
No, it's not.
And so those young people are quite disenchanted and disaffected with the world they see around them. I reckon about the... I'm happy to hear from our listeners, but I reckon one of the only institutions for which the Australian people, the general Australian people, have respect now are the uniformed members of the Australian Defence Force.
Yeah. I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Yeah. I reckon
you
that's
are quite right.
I think you're absolutely right.
And you look at the way that the over commercialisation of Christmas and Easter and
there's
and
bloody Christmas cakes on the supermarket now.
And Anzac Day is still that day that we hold incredibly sacred.
And young people.
Absolutely.
I get the privilege of standing up on the steps there and have for many years now. And it's amazing. I remember the days when there were 12, 15,000 people at that ceremony, at the dawn service.
Yeah, not anymore.
Well 2015 there were 100,000.
Yeah.
Any other year there'll be 40 or 50,000.
Yeah.
And the striking number of young people who are there. You know, and it's quite an interesting movement. So I think respect for institutions is crumbling. I would also argue, Justin, you know, your profession as well, the media. And journalism. There is less trust now, and that's not about, you know, fake news and that sort of stuff. It is about, you know, the fact that people don't necessarily trust the media as they once did.
I agree. Absolutely.
And so respect for institutions, whatever they are, crumbling. How political parties rebuild it, I don't know.
Can I, just before you go to the break, I'm sorry, Macca, but can I just suggest, can I swear very quickly?
Yes.
That's the bullshit radar has been carefully honed against politicians, against journalists, against the church. It has been honed.
It has.
A little better.
Yep.
As a example of the complete lack of respect anymore, people don't obey the 12 items limit in the supermarket. Robert, I want to ask you, because I was actually, interesting, I was going through some of our podcast statistics.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're a very regular guest and very popular, the downloads of yours. But one of the most popular was a while ago when we spoke about homelessness.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. In the city of Melbourne, and that was one of the a big lot of downloads on that.
Yeah.
It's always a bit of a movable target, isn't it? Where are we at with that? Because I think you're doing something this week, I believe.
I am. In the LGBTI community, there is an element of homelessness that's not well understood.
Yeah.
We understand pretty much why other people become homeless, and it might be mental illness, it might be drug or alcohol addiction, it might be, you know, domestic violence. We've actually, with the Lord Mayor's Charitable Foundation and the Gay and Lesbian Foundation and one other private philanthropic body, commissioned a study that looks at homelessness among LGBT people.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we couldn't get very many intersex people, so we've left that off. It's not statistically possible to put that group in. And we've found some really interesting things. We've talked to people with experience of homelessness. We've talked to service providers. I won't preempt too much of the report, but a couple of the things that I found interesting. The reasons for homelessness among LGBT people different from the rest of the population. It's often rejection at home.
Yeah.
It's often bullying that started early at school. But in other words, it is directly connected to LGBT issues. And that is something quite different. And this is the first study that's been done of its kind. And a couple of the things that it recommends, so I won't go into the whole report, but that agencies should have training for their staff to deal with LGBTI people who are homeless, and those policies need to be different from the rest of the homeless population. The LGBT community also tends to be homeless at a younger age than the rest of the homeless cohort.
So what age are we talking about, Ron?
Well, unfortunately, we're talking about some people who run away from home at, you know, 14, 15.
Wow.
And then, you know, this is sort of a bit old-fashioned to call it primary, secondary and tertiary homelessness, but primary homelessness is, you know, sleeping rough, and there are a few people like that. A lot of young people are that secondary homelessness, so they couch surf.
Yeah, finding a couch where they can.
That's it. Yeah. Or their accommodation is precarious, to say the least.
What is that? I mean, you know, if somebody's like that at that age, Robert, that's heartbreaking, isn't it? Because how do they then get themselves enough money to get their own life going with a home, get their career going, and how do they take off from that? That is...
And that's the big question,
tough,
isn't it? Because unless you have specific policies around the LGBT community who are homeless, then that won't happen.
Yeah.
You know, but with young people, it is possible, with the right supports and with the right knowledge and with the right policies in place, to get people re-engaged, particularly in education. And that's what's going to be the ticket out. That's the pathway.
Yeah.
So, Robert, in terms of the findings of this report, I know you're only give too much away, yeah, but were there any sort of interesting patterns? Like, for example, were you seeing more homelessness coming from rural areas or particular parts of metropolitan Melbourne?
No, it's not really postcode based. It's really that it was more about the behaviours. Bullying features a lot. Alienation features a lot.
Yeah.
Family rejection features a lot.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter whether it was rural, outer suburban, inner suburban, wherever.
Right.
You know, all of those things came into play, and they are quite different from the causal factors that we've found with the rest of the homeless population.
Another big one that kicks in with homelessness too, Robert, is embarrassment.
Yeah.
I talked to a man, beautiful man, he's back on his feet now, a man by the name of Trevor Wolf, and he had problems with gambling, a little bit of a problem with alcohol, but yep, mainly with gambling. And he lost a lot, and he just couldn't bring himself to tell his family that he had done that. So he was sleeping in Treasury Gardens on a bench for months, and almost a year, because he just couldn't... That was basically his only issue. And the second issue was that he couldn't... he couldn't prove his identity to get some welfare because he didn't have a birth certificate, and he couldn't get a birth certificate because he didn't have a birth certificate. So it kept rolling around in this cycle for them.
One of the things that the urban saint Brendan Nottle up at 69 Bourke Street does is actually provide an address for people so that you can derive benefits, and they help people through that as well, as the Melbourne City Mission and a range of other agencies. But the problems compound. And we're quite interested in how we can feed this back to the agencies dealing with the homeless to say, it's sort of like the veteran community. They too are overrepresented in the homeless community,
yeah.
But for different reasons again. That's you know, post-traumatic stress and just dislocation. But
depression.
Depression as well, a bit of mental illness
and
behind it.
Usually alcohol and drug use.
Yeah, a lot of that. But with the LGBT community, it was different again. Mm. And that's the thing I think we need to get through to the agencies.
And do you have any prevalence data? I mean,
yes, we do, but I'm not going to tell you about it yet.
Okay.
But it's actually quite striking. And as I say, it's young people. And that actually, on the one hand, it depresses you because you think, how can people at such a young age be thrown onto the streets to their own resources? And the streets can be a dangerous place, particularly for young women. But the good part is, because they are young, with the right services, I believe that there are really positive pathways out that we can offer. But we need to be working more closely with our agencies to say, have you got the staff that are trained? How do you identify? What are your policies around LGBT people who are homeless? What specialist services do you need to be thinking about? And this report will provide some of the answers to that. And I'm very proud to be launching it on Wednesday night.
And to come up with some of these responses, having some evidence and some real research.
Yep.
You know, we all have a particular, I suppose, view on why sometimes this happens, but to actually have the evidence and the research, which will then provide the pathway out.
You've got to have data.
You know, you've got to have the data.
Well, it helps organisations to build their responses to have an informed basis for the responses that they develop.
But let's face it, a lot of those agencies, and they do wonderful work. I mean, you know, the Salvos, Melbourne City Mission, Launch Housing, they're just fantastic. But of course, their resources are so skinny that they're all put into service provision, and so they should be. Yeah. So this sort of research and data had to be provided separately.
Mm.
And it is a collaboration, University of Melbourne, Swinburne, bit of RMIT, Lawbears Charitable Foundation, Gay and Lesbian Foundation funding it, and now we've actually got the first
one.
What I think will be a number of reports, because this also raises questions as well as providing some answers for us. So we think there's more research down the track to be done, but as I say, depressing on the one hand that homelessness happens among LGBT people at an earlier stage than most, but optimism on the other that does give us a pathway out for those young people.
Yeah.
This is why we're very proud to have you as our Lord Mayor.
Oh, thanks.
Because this sort of work is invaluable. It really is. And not just for our community, for a whole lot of other communities where the City of Melbourne does do some hard yards. I think it's really, really important.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.